Yes, sir.
I wanted to address, I believe that when you have gotten to the being and you are being and the finances are coming because of your beingness, where does the abundance come in? The abundance of the finances, the abundance of money, not just that you have money, not just that money is coming because of your beingness, but truly abundance.
Well, we get into a very difficult area here having to do with how you define abundance. You see, it's clear to me that there's a definition of abundance behind your question that may not be agreed to or agreed with by everyone in the room. Some people feel abundant if they're making $100 a week, and they feel very abundant, and it's not a lie, it's their truth. And some people don't feel abundant unless they're making $1,000 a week or $10,000 a week. So my first question to you in return would be, what do you mean by abundance?
I mean by abundance that which is above and beyond, that which meets the necessities, the bills, the mortgage note, the et cetera, the life, and you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
The
but
money beyond that.
Yeah, I understand that, but now I'm going to, at the risk of sounding a bit argumentative, I'm going to explore with you even further those words. Money above and beyond the necessities requires us to define the necessities, because you immediately followed that by saying the mortgage, the this, the that. Well, there are some people, in fact, who live in a tent and don't have a mortgage as a necessity, you see, and they're perfectly happy to do so. I spent a year and a half of my life living in a small cabin on top of a mountain that required me to pay $125 a month in rent to the owner of this land who was renting out this little dinky cabin to me. And so I had enough money to have cash left over after I met my necessities. We begin to have abundance if, in fact, abundance is defined as that amount of money that we have after meeting our necessities. We begin to have abundance when we begin to redefine what's necessary. I just said a mouthful there, and I hope that you heard that. We begin to experience abundance when we begin to redefine, I'm sure you would agree with this, what's necessary to get through life and to be happy doing it. That's the first way, and that's the thrust of your question, that we produce that kind of abundance. It's not by necessarily increasing our cash, but by reducing how much cash is necessary. And that's a figment of our imagination. We are imagining how much we think we need to get by because we've made it up that way. See, this man over here that spoke to us earlier out of his courage and willingness to be visible was telling us that somehow or another in his life he imagined that it was necessary to have a large home and a large mortgage that goes with it. And tonight he has reached a conclusion and apparently decided that he is no longer going to mortgage the rest of his life in order that he might mortgage his home. You see? I once had a man who called me up and he said, "I understand you do individual counseling." This is in the days when I did that. And I said, "Yes, I do." And he said, "Great. Would you please come out here and have a conversation with me?" I said, "I'm sorry, I don't do house calls." He said, "Well, I need you to come out here because I can't get to where you are." I said, "You can't? Why not?" He said, "Well, I live on a park bench on 3rd and State in downtown San Diego. And I'm a street person, and I just used a quarter that I found on the sidewalk to call you." He said, "I saw your ad in a piece of paper that I was using as an umbrella." I said, "That's very interesting. You want me to come down to your park bench at 3rd and State and do a house call?" He said, "Yes." I said, "You know what? I'm going to do it." He said, "Good, bring me something to eat." See, he was clear. So I did, in fact, bring him something to eat. In fact, my wife and I put together a whole great big pot of soup and some peanut butter sandwiches that could last him a couple of days, all kinds of stuff that he could have. He could eat for like a couple of days off of the stuff we gave him. And I went down to meet this guy at the park bench. He was a very erudite, articulate fellow, very brilliant guy. And he sat there on that park bench and he said, "See that?" And he pointed up to a skyscraper. "See that skyscraper?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "I should be up there in that penthouse, in the top of that building, making those corporate decisions, not down here on the park bench. That's where I should be, right there." I said, "You will never get there as long as it's not okay with you to be here. You can only get there when you get that the penthouse and the park bench are the same place. Because what you resist persists. And as long as you resist being on this park bench, you will glue yourself here forever. It's like the guy who was walking down the street in Los Angeles, the inebriated guy, and he was leaning up against the telephone pole, and the policeman came along and said, 'I'm sorry, sir,' he said, 'but if you want to stay here, you've got to move on.'" You understand? I've spent a year of my life on the streets. I know what it's like to be a so-called homeless person. I lived in a tent. My home was a tent in a campground for $25 a week. And I lived on what I could pull together, picking up soda cans in the park. It's a true story. And I spent a year of my life doing that because I had broken my neck, lost my means of employment, and on top of that, some guy came along and stole my car in the same week. And so I suddenly found myself with no transportation, no income, and a broken neck, and no one who seemed to care. I even went to one of my former wives and said, "Could I stay with you just for a while, just in the other room? I won't bother you. I know you have a spare bedroom here. Just a month or two to get myself back together." And the answer was, "No, you may not. But I will give you the tent in the garage." And she handed me the tent. And there I was trucking down the road on foot. I do not have a car, with this tent and lugging this stuff as best I could to the nearest campground. And there I sat for the next year. So I know what it's about to be living on the street. And I know what it's about to have $10 or $12 or $15 a week. And that's why I say I know what abundance is, because I've been there where abundance was $100 a week, beyond my wildest dreams, in the middle of that experience, when I picked up a part-time job for $100 a week, 2 days a week, part-time, $50 a day, $100. I had the experience of going back to that campground with all the other guys and a few women as well who were on the street. And they saw that I had picked up a job for $100 a week. You've got to get that $100 a week when you're in that situation is a great big pile of money. And we would sit there on a Saturday night and count out the money and just give it away and share it with those who didn't even have that. I changed. She said, "How did you change it, Neil?" Number one, I was so okay with it that I didn't care whether it changed or not. I mean, I had my stuff, my little bedroll. Oh, I had, over the year, I had gathered a few other things, a couple of, you know, little trinkets and stuff that you get at garage sales and whatever I could pick up from the other guys in the park as they moved on. They'd leave me this or leave me that and bequeath me there, you know, "I bequeath you my lantern." And after a year, I picked up quite a bit of stuff that way. But it changed because it didn't have to change for me. I was okay with the way it was. And I was so okay with the way it was that I was able to give away what little I have to those around. Like, I mean, call us having, I'd go to the grocery store and pick up a few groceries for $10 or $20. And then everybody in the whole campground would come around and we'd open the cans of corn and the cans of peas and we'd split them. And we'd all eat like kings. We ate like kings. Stop resisting and making not okay where you are. But move into the fullness and the richness thereof. Because what you resist will persist and teach what you have to learn. In other words, that which you would choose for yourself, give to another. and then you'll be able to stay in non-resistance. In fact, what I want you to do is put an ad in the paper. It'll cost you about $8 or $10, $12. And the ad must say, a class in non-resistance, the art and science of using God. And then I want you to give that class one night a week, a class in non-resistance. And when people call you and say, what is that class? I don't understand what that means. You'll say to them, it's about moving into not resisting what's so right now, but rather accepting and embracing it lovingly, that you might then transform that which you own. You see, because as long as you refuse to hold it and own it lovingly, you cannot let it go. See, I can't let these glasses go until I pick them up and call them my own. As long as they're there on my lap, where I've now put them, I can't let them go. I can only let this go when I pick it up and own it. Now I'm holding it. That is to say, I'm not resisting its presence in my life. But I'm holding it and declaring it to be my own. Then I can let them go. You cannot let go of that which you do not have hold of. That is rule of life number 8. Therefore, the first step toward releasing anything is to notice that you're holding it. Does anyone else have a question before we move off of this subject on money and how we can effectively deal with it in our lives? Yes, sir.
Neil, I've kind of been coming to the realization that my highest thought about money is that it's a pain in the butt.
What you've just said is another version of money is the root of all evil, or money is evil. You've just said another version of that. See, where we need to go is to hold the thought that money in and of itself is not a pain in the butt, and just change our thoughts around it. Money is not the lowest form of exchanging the energy of life or the energy of God. Cut it out. Stop that. Every morning I want you to get up and say right to your mirror, I love money and money loves me. So just try to say it with me just for laughs. I love money and money loves me. Ready?
I love money and money loves me.
If you get up every day of your life, and if you can say it out loud, say it out loud. If you can convince yourself to say it out loud, say it out loud. I love money and money loves me. I love God and God loves me. And God is money. There is nothing that God is not. And I love money and all the money I need is coming to me now.
Show me the money.